My title is The Good Life. It's always something neat about being assigned a title. You just sort of have to, and it leads you places that otherwise you wouldn't go. So, yeah. Who invited him anyway? The Good Life. First thing comes to my mind is a popular jazz standard by Sasha Distel and Jack Reardon. It was recorded by Tony Bennett in 1963 when popular music still sounded like music and became... and it became a kind of theme song for him. Anybody heard of Tony Bennett? The lyric, though, contains a simple irony that what is supposed to be the good life, sophistication, success, style, Versace suits, turns out to be empty and hopeless. And the second half of chapter 3 and the beginning of chapter 4 of the letter to James has a very similar message. Conventional worldly wisdom ends up sowing disorder and wickedness. And so our theme today is simple. If you get nothing else, this is it. The good life, according to worldly wisdom, fashionable, sophisticated, successful, is ultimately empty. The good life, based on wisdom from above, is, and here I quote James, pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. So to live according to the wisdom of above, from above, is to embrace life in its fullness. In a sense, to live according to worldly wisdom is to avoid life altogether. So James begins this section by asking, who is wise and understanding among you? And when he says that, there's an echo. He's echoing chapter 8 of Proverbs. The writer is echoing more than that, the whole wisdom tradition in Hebrew thought. Chapter 8 of Proverbs begins, does not wisdom call and does not understanding raise her voice? The letter of James is set firmly in that wisdom tradition. Like large sections of Proverbs, the wisdom of Solomon, Ecclesiasticus, the Epistle of James is a collection of moral and practical advice about living a wise and prudent life. Just a minute, you might be saying. Wisdom of Solomon? Ecclesiasticus? Are they in the Bible? Never heard of them. Well, if you grew up Presbyterian or United Church or some other part of the Reformed tradition, the Bible you came to know does not actually include those books. If you grew up Anglican or Lutheran, you learned that these books and several others are contained in a third section of the Bible called the Old Testament Apocrypha. Or you might not have learned that, but it's there anyway. If you grew up Roman Catholic, you learned that they are contained in the Old Testament proper, and they're interleaved throughout the whole thing. And the short reason for that is the great 16th century French reformer Jean Calvin thought that these late wisdom books did not contribute to Christian doctrine, and so he left them out of the Geneva Bible, which became the standard Protestant Bible. All these wisdom books of the Old Testament Apocrypha and of Proverbs in the Bible personify wisdom as a female figure integral to the being of God. I think Calvin might have had a problem with that. She is instrumental in the design and order of creation, and she urges us constantly to live our lives in harmony with God's intention, particularly as it is reflected in God's law. The letter of James is in this tradition, but, and this is an important but, instead of concentrating on the perfection of the law, It focuses on the fruit of good works that flows from faith in Jesus Christ. The good works that give shape to our faith. For James, it is not possible to have faith in theory. It must be practiced. It must bear fruit concretely in the world. And he says, baldly, faith without works is dead. And I venture to say that in this, James is recalling what Jesus himself taught. He made his summary of the law and the prophets. And in three of the Gospels, it's in his own mouth. In Luke, it's in the mouth of somebody else, he asks. The second part, love your neighbor as yourself, is the good fruit of the first part. Love God with your whole being. Jesus frequently illustrates this theme in his own teaching about bearing fruit and being productive. Think of the teaching that he built around the true vine. I am the true vine in John 15. It's all about the fruit of the vine and being the fruit of the vine. Think of the parable of the sower, sowing the seeds, and it bears a number of folds of harvest, of fruit. Being productive with what you've got, what you've been given. The parable of the talents in Matthew 25. Doing acts of kindness and generosity. The Good Samaritan comes to mind, Luke 10. And when James refers to the wisdom that has come from above, from heaven, he is writing clearly about Jesus' own teaching. So the wisdom, when that line comes up, the wisdom from above, what he means is Jesus' teaching. There's a kind of unsophisticated, straight-ahead honesty in the letter of James. Later in chapter 5, he says, don't get complicated with oaths and contracts. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Straighten up and fly right, just straight ahead. Don't be complicated. Conflicts and disputes, he says, are the result of craving and coveting things you can't have. The key is to reject, and this somehow got left out of the reading that we actually did, but I think it's in the reading that's prescribed. The key is to reject, and this is harsh, any pleasure that might arise from earthly pursuits, because in your enjoyment, you are being unfaithful to God. It's like committing adultery, according to James. So the writer turns Psalm 30 and other passages upside down by writing, let your laughter be turned to mourning. Let your joy turn into dejection. It's better to be joyless and dejected than to take pleasure in the wrong things. And as I said, that's pretty harsh. But you get the point. Worldly wisdom, with all of its sophistication and style, is only going to cause conflict with misery and emptiness. Wisdom from the above, on the other hand, leads to fulfillment, peace, and being fully alive. Jesus is fond of framing the conflict James is describing here as paradoxes. We had one last week in Mark 8 where Jesus says, for those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. And today, this week, in chapter 8, 35, another paradoxical saying. Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. Jesus is far more sophisticated, if you like, than James is in the way he puts things. And how powerful those paradoxes are. The force of these statements, I think, is this. Like Jesus, we are called to a sort of voluntary slavery. And that means giving up any sense of being something ourselves. Like giving up, a slave gives up identity. A slave's identity is in the master entirely. A sort of voluntary slavery. That is, we put ourselves at the disposal of others or another. And this is what James is getting at in his very anti-sophisticated manner. Very simple. To live the good life is to choose, for the sake of Jesus Christ and his wisdom from above, to devote oneself to a life of service to others.